Hello and welcome into this edition of podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, Rex, we spent about 40 minutes on Wednesday talking about how this is going to be such a strategic test and you have to have experience and you really have to know how you're going to have to plot your way around Royal Birkdal. And what happens? Yes, Jackson Suber, who is spending his first time ever in the UK, who has played only 27 holes of links golf preparation for this Open Championship. Yes, he is in the house with a 5-under 65, and he has a one-shot lead as we sit here after the opening round of the Open. A day of surprises. Some good in terms of Jackson Suber, Scottie Scheffler, Bryson DeChambeau, and also some bad with our pre-tournament favorites Matt Fitzpatrick and Rory McIlroy off to a slow start.
And Pearson Cootey, it's worth pointing out, is just two strokes behind the leader, Jackson Suber. They're sharing a house this week. Both first-timers. It's absolutely amazing when you consider this was going to be that test that required some sort of experience. This was going to be the test where you really had to be strategic. Also, you can counter and say Robert McIntyre, who knows how to play links golf as well as anyone. You have Henrik Stenson, who's won this. He's a 50-something. So you have a little bit of both. I guess I was a little surprised. You pointed one out that surprised me. You actually jumped on Matt Fitzpatrick as your favorite this week. I would have if you wouldn't have had sharp elbows and gotten to him first. And I'm pretty shocked the way that one played out. I think Scottie Scheffler did what I thought Scottie Scheffler was going to do. But it was one of those days, and you and I got here pretty early this morning, where you see the split, where when we got here, there was virtually no wind whatsoever. I was told by a couple of players that they actually saw water coming up on a couple of the approach shots because they'd just been watered the greens. I think the RNA is being careful, but as we get closer and closer to Sunday, I would expect that to get firmer and faster.
Burn, baby, burn. That's what we want to see here.
Beautifully brown, I think is what you said.
At Royal Birkdal, the temperatures are continuing to be in the upper 70s, lower 80s. You mentioned the wind. I mean, it was max 15-mile-an-hour gusts today. The big difference, what actually happened in the opening round, was a wind switch about halfway through. I talked to Aaron Oberholzer. He was absolutely giddy. He knew it.
The wind map?
He had predicted this in the wind maps earlier in the week. That did make a difference in scoring. You did not see all that many rounds in the afternoon that went deep. You also saw the greens. You mentioned how soft and receptive they were. These Poana greens, they got really, really bumpy. So you saw a lot of players miss putts inside 5 feet, also some tricky hole locations. I was out with the Bryson, Terrell Hatton, Scottie Scheffler group earlier in the day, multiple occasions, two or three holes in which all three players missed from inside 10 feet, which is pretty unusual. So obviously some difficult hole locations there. Let's start, Rex. Actually, I did want to talk a little bit about Jackson Suber because he has been playing well over the past couple of weeks. You've seen him, I think, at Colonial as well as Canada, a player who got into this Open Championship because of his performance north of the border at the Canadian Open. Yes, it's a surprise to see him at this position. I believe it was plus 13,000, according to the odds makers. He is now the first round leader. But if you've been paying attention to the PGA Tour over the past couple of months, this is certainly a player who's been trending in the right direction.
And I interviewed him this afternoon, and he actually pointed out that he's been playing well since Myrtle Beach. And, of course, I was in Canada with him, and he was in the hunt going into Saturday's round. He faded a little bit on Saturday afternoon, but he still finished inside the top five. John Deere Classic is another example. And it's a player, as you pointed out, never even been to Europe, certainly never played links golf before. This is very much a surprise. But it's a player where I don't think you can discount confidence in a situation like this. You still have to execute the shots. You still have to figure out a way, because I'm always curious about game plans when it comes to this golf course and when the way it's playing. And yet he didn't seem to be too caught up in it. It was just try to hit as close as I can. He did say he was dialing it back a little bit. He was trying to play underneath the trouble. I think a lot of guys were trying to do that today. But the big thing, he was top 10 strokes gained approach. He was top 10 strokes gained putting. I think those are the two key stats so far this week.
Yeah, that's usually a good combination. He said this is the most confidence he's ever had in a driver. Made an equipment switch about a month ago. He made a golf ball switch a couple months prior to that. I don't think it's any coincidence that that has sort of correlated with some of his improved results, a la Cameron Young last year with his move to new golf ball at the Wyndham Championship. That took his career to a whole other level. We're seeing that, at least on a smaller scale, as it relates to Jackson Suber. It certainly was ironic because Jackson Suber finished up, and about an hour later, Shane Lowry came in, and he obviously did not have any knowledge that this is the first time that Jackson Suber is playing links golf in his career. He said, "I pity all of the first-timers this week at the Open, because all of a sudden you've got really severe, not necessarily unprecedented, but certainly conditions we have not seen over the past decade, where you have four irons that are going 300. It's just a complete guess how your ball is going to react when it hits these baked out fairways." He said, "I'm pitying all these first timers." And here you have a first timer up in the lead. I'm looking at the leaderboard, Rex. Like, there is a little bit of something for everyone. Sungjae Im, a very controlled player. Bobby McIntyre.
Some would say a potpourri.
It is a potpourri. Bobby McIntyre said he was intentionally laying back of all the trouble. The pot bunkers are most links golf courses, where the big mistake is that you're trying to avoid at all costs. He is being ultra conservative in his strategy. Francesco Molinari, we have not seen him basically since 2018 in the Open Championship when he won here as well. Alex Smalley, who popped up a couple of months ago at the PGA Championship. Ryan Gerard, who has played nicely on the PGA Tour, just lost in the playoff about a month ago at the Memorial. A hodgepodge of leaderboard. I think this is sort of what you'd come to expect in the Open Championship. 156 players, an interesting golf course that is really not necessarily predicated on one style of play. Variety of styles can get it done here.
And Brando Chamblee just made a great point on Live From that. If your favorite player did not have a good day on Thursday, rest assured, like, Friday's a brand new day. The tee times are going to flip. For example, I think Rory McIlroy is 2 over par. You would think it's 7 over par. You would be thinking he probably played his way out of the tournament. I wouldn't say that's the case at all, because you're going to see the scoring split go the other way, at least if the forecast holds. We're on the coast. Anything can happen. It's links golf. I understand that. But if we get a similar forecast tomorrow, which is what we're supposed to get, I can imagine a situation where that leaderboard flips entirely again, and we end up with a whole different potpourri.
No disrespect to Jackson Subra, but I would argue that the biggest storyline on Thursday was what happened with Bryson DeChambeau. If you've not been paying attention, we were going for the DeSlambo. Yes, we were going for the DeSlambo.
It was your phrase, and you're struggling with it.
No, I forgot what I called it. But it was the DeSlambo, and it was 4 consecutive missed cuts in the major championships in 2026. It would certainly be a surprise if that were the case now. Bryson in the house with a 367, just 2 shots back at this point. I looked it up, Rex. He's currently in a tie for 4. This is just the second time in Bryson's Open career that he has been inside the top 70 after the opening round. If you missed it earlier this week, 3-time Open champion Nick Faldo said that Bryson has, quote, zero clue about strategy as it relates to playing links golf. Did this one round, keep in mind he has a couple of top 10 finishes over the past couple of years, convince you otherwise?
No, absolutely not. I think there's still, I want to see a lot. And I just did hit on Live From about Bryson, and I wish I would have done it a little bit better. So I'm going to give it a better shot this time around. Bryson also chose not to speak with the media. He spoke with the RNA, the official media of the tournament, but he didn't speak with anyone else, Sky Sports, NBC, Golf Channel, no one else. And I do think it's interesting.
We're going to get in that.
I don't want to touch on that right now. But the one thing I did want to point out, I guess I'm encouraged with the way he was able to work his way around what was a difficult golf course. It was a thinking man's golf course, and he was able to do that. The one thing that really stands out to me was he just put 3D irons in play. They just got approved just a few weeks ago by the USGA and the RNA. And you would point to him being inside the top 5 in strokes gained approach. That's the one area where he has been awful, I would argue, in the major championships the last few years. It was the one area we would point, if he can't fix that, a la the Masters this year, when he's on the range again trying to find some sort of answers and they're just not there. That gives me hope, because it's the one thing that you felt like if he could find a fix for, then everything sort of falls back into place. But I would still point to his record at the Open Championship. I would still point to a forecast that is going to leave players guessing, uncertain, not knowing exactly what clubs to play off certain holes. All of those things they're kryptonite to Bryson. He needs answers. He doesn't want questions.
So it might be semantics, because when Nick Faldo says that Bryson DeChambeau has zero sense of strategy in how to play links golf, Bryson does have a strategy. His strategy doesn't happen to be the one that Nick Faldo thinks is the one that you should do. Nick Faldo thinks the strategy should be threading the ball in between the bunkers, playing conservatively, playing sort of point-to-point golf, and obviously he has the record to prove that. Bryson DeChambeau's strategy is to do something completely different. Mm-hmm. It is most likely to wield driver and to do so very aggressively. And look, Bryson DeChambeau hit driver a lot. He did not hit the most of any player in the field. He did not lead the field in driving distance. However, he hit just 4 of 14 fairways in the opening round. What he did do, however, was from those positions, because he had shorter clubs in, he was actually able to control his trajectory, his shot shape quite nicely with those 3D irons, as you mentioned. That's why I was a little bit hesitant in the preview podcast. I think we both were, to sort of draw conclusions about how Bryson was going to play this week, because this was a pretty significant equipment change. He'd been leading up to this for the past year or two, saying that this was going to be a transformative move in terms of his equipment and being able to control the part of his game, which really has not been great since 2017, 2018, when he was a completely different golfer at that stage of his career. But I watched it with my own two eyes. He was able to flight the ball down. He was able to control his spin. I thought he had some really tidy short game work as well, either with the putter from off the green, played a couple of nice bump and runs as well to help save par. So for driving, the approach play, certainly around the green, I thought he was excellent. Couple missed opportunities, one on the par five on 14, missed about a 3 or 4 footer for par. One of his drop shots, and on 18, didn't quite get away with an errant drive as well, was skittering it to the back of the green and missed about a 10-footer. But overall, I was pretty impressed with what I saw.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Bryson has a plan. He thinks he knows how to play Lynx golf. And no, it's not what Nick Faldo wants to do. It's not probably what Robert McIntyre or anyone else wants to do. But I would argue that's Bryson DeChambeau on every golf course. He has a unique plan. That's why he is Bryson DeChambeau.
He should use his driver. It's his biggest weapon.
Absolutely. So, no, I completely agree with you on that front. I think the part that I get hung up with, and you're right, I think the irons, the new equipment, and there were some other equipment things on Thursday I'm going to touch on, those all were always going to factor into this equation. I always go back to there's too many variables in Lynx golf. And we're talking about the mad scientist. We're talking about someone that just wants solutions. I don't want variables. I don't want things that I can't quantify exactly. And that's the definition of Lynx golf. I think that's why I always look at Bryson and Lynx golf and think to myself, I'm not quite sure this is going to be his brand of vodka. And I will say also, it's a new driver in play this week. I think he went back to the crank.
The old driver. Yep.
Well, crank driver. And also I was told by a member of his team that he had a 2 or 3 iron that he had been practicing with all week long. Everybody pretty much in the field was practicing with it because of the conditions we've talked about. And just before his tee time, he put the 5 wood back in play, which he hadn't used at all. So you get an idea of where his head's at.
This was also the player who, prior to winning the 2024 US Open, was quite literally changing out his driver head about 3 or 4 minutes before he was due on the tee on that Sunday, ended up winning. He does things his own way, and that is the Bryson DeChambeau way. Obviously, he did not talk to the media. He, as you mentioned, he talked to sort of a member of the, I don't even know what you would call it, the RNA's like media staff.
Yeah, that's exactly.
He turned down all of the media outlets, the TV channels, turned down us as reporters. At this point, Rex, I believe it's now 5 consecutive major championship rounds. Did not talk to us here, did not talk to us after missing the cut. Either the 2 rounds at the US Open, either the 2 rounds at the PGA Championship. I actually think it might be 6. He did not talk after missing the cut at the Masters as well. What is going on with Bryson? What is he frustrated about? And do you see an end to this sort of petulance?
This is what I tried to say on live from, and I didn't do a very good job of it. And it's a very similar situation to what we had with Colin Morikawa earlier last year. API on Sunday, he didn't play particularly well. He didn't want to talk to the media, and that spilled over to the Players' Championship the next week. And it became kind of a flashpoint. It became an issue on the PGA Tour. This is very, very similar because clearly Bryson DeChambeau is not happy with the narrative around his story right now. Clearly he's not happy with the media right now, which is all well and good. And I leaned into this just like I did with the Colin Morikawa issue. Professional athletes have no obligation to speak with the media, and I'm pretty sure the public doesn't care what the media thinks we're entitled to.
At least in this sport, they don't have any obligation. That's not true necessarily in other
sports. Well, there are rules in other sports, but I would still argue that even with those rules in place, the athlete doesn't really have an obligation. And again, I don't think the public has any interest in hearing us complain about players deciding not to speak with us. I will say, and I made the same argument, Bryson DeChambeau owes the tournament and the RNA something. He owes the sponsor something. He certainly owes the fans something. And even if you're not happy with the narrative around your name, I would argue this is a perfect opportunity to stand in front of a microphone and change that narrative. Imagine if he sat in front of that microphone today and talked about those 3D irons. The majority of this media center would have written about that. Yes, there would have been 2 or 3 writers in here that probably would have taken him to task. There might have been a couple of analysts that took him to task for whatever it is they wanted to do. So I keep coming back to the idea that you can change your own narrative and you're choosing not to. And on the macro, I also want to point out, I don't know if Bryson DeChambeau wants to come back to the PGA Tour, but if he does, or any player on LIV Golf wants to come back to the PGA Tour, the pathway is clear. Brooks Koepka has blazed that pathway. And you look at what Brooks has done the last 7 months. He stepped to every microphone, answered every question, regardless of how uncomfortable or difficult that question was. And he's done everything the PGA Tour has asked him. The narrative around Brooks Koepka now is not Brooks Koepka, the live player that maybe chased the money. It's Brooks Koepka, the PGA Tour player. That's how you do it. And Bryson can't seem to wrap his mind around that.
That's what I don't understand.
See, I did that much better than I did on live from. Please don't allow it to live from. Just go with that.
Burn the tape. Use this one. That's what I don't understand, because this is a golden opportunity to actually speak your mind and help change perceptions and help get your side of the story out there. And he's declining to do so. It's like he's cultivated this YouTube world where he's insulated from it and he can have takes and he can carefully curate his own image and without ever being challenged. And he's trying to bring that world, that sanitized, personalized YouTube world, to bring it to a major championship where the worldwide media is here. And they're putting him under the microscope and they want to ask him questions to actually get truthful answers, authentic answers, genuine answers, instead of what he's saying on his own social media. I covered like the Bryson COVID era issue where he had in Memphis back in 2021. He made some controversial comments at the time. He ended up going on, I believe, like a 6 to 9 month media hiatus, basically claiming it was you guys, us guys, the media who were out to get him and made a poor example of him. And it wasn't actually his own comments, didn't really take responsibility for his part in it. I'm having exact flashbacks, but this is the exact same thing that has happened. What I believe was the trigger to this was when Bryson talked to a couple of reporters, including Bulldog, ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh, at the Live event in Virginia. He made some pretty controversial comments about the PGA Tour, saying they're not doing all that well either. It's disappointing that there would be penalties imposed on him because of what, quote, I could do for them. That blew up, and he was essentially muzzled at the PGA Championship. So I think that, where he sort of put his foot in his mouth once again, then coupled with the continued poor play, coupled with the uncertainty and speculation about his short-term and long-term future on LIV Golf and what he's going to do, coupled with the fact that Nick Faldo and Brandon Chamblee, among others, came out this week and were criticizing him as well. I think he's more than content at this point to keep stiff arming, to keep isolating, to keep insulating himself from any sort of outside criticism. But it is such a poor look. And just if he's receiving bad advice, we don't know that, or if he's just going rogue and this is how he wants to handle it. Whatever it is such a bad look and such a poor way to handle it, because it just makes him look petulant.
I'll go off the last night's match. And since we're in the middle of World Cup season, it's an on goal. This is what it really feels like. And I'll also go on and say it's a shame, because I would argue he is still the most compelling figure in golf, not just because he opened with a 67 today, but because of all of the things that we just sat here and talked about. He would be such a good story today. Instead, we're sitting here second guessing some decisions he made away from the microphone.
And it involves some media literacy as well. Like, Nick Faldo is not waiting in the flash here. Brandon Chamblee is not waiting in the flash here. We have genuine golf questions that we want to ask him. He's refusing to do so. If anything, it only helps add to golf fans' knowledge of how he's trying to complete his Open Championship and trying to win a claret jug. The player who was paired with Bryson on Thursday was Scottie Scheffler. I thought he got around pretty well and was really severely penalized for, I would say, two mistakes. On seven, he was certainly not the only player who really struggled on the donut hole par three, missed the green, ended up making bogey. On 17, got a really poor break after what was obviously his worst shot of the day. Blew it wide right into such a horrific lie, Rex, in that right rough. He actually thought that a fan had stepped on it, was denied free relief, thought about taking an unplayable, ended up not doing so, and making a bogey. Scottie in the house with 68 is certainly in a good position. Real quick before we get out of here, some disappointments. Matt Fitzpatrick, Roy McIlroy carded 72s. Jordan Spieth with a 73. Other than that, I still don't think even those players, after a disappointing opening round, I really don't think they're out of this golf tournament just seven shots back.
I don't either. Again, the field's going to flip tomorrow. If the forecast holds, I could see someone opening up tomorrow morning with another six, Rory or Jordan Spieth, or someone opening with a 66 and really closing the gap on that. Yeah, I don't think we see any sort of clarity until tomorrow afternoon. We're sitting here having this exact same conversation.
Chris Gauthier up at even, Colin Morikawa at 2 under. Shane Lowry, good to see him bounce back with his Open pedigree at 1 under as well. Victor Hovland, one of the players I was keeping an eye on at even par as well. All right, so plenty to look forward to on Friday, the second round of the Open Championship. Rex has to get off to go speak with Jim Rome. It's going to be a great interview. Go out and check that wherever you are. He said he's going to do even better. His Bryson take is going to be even
better.
Try it
a third time. Yes,
this is going to be the third take.
Okay, Bryson 3.0. Give me a second.
It's going to be terrific. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Loud. Make sure you go to golfchannel.com for the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I will have another edition of the Live From Newsletter with Rex and Lav in your inbox. It's actually on Friday night or Sunday morning, depending if you don't want to check your email heading into the weekend. But we're going to have plenty of great insights in there, wrapping up the second round and the halfway point of this 154th Open Championship. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys Friday night.